Welcome back to Ride On. I'm here with Dan Carr, co-founder and CEO of Lug and Carry. Dan, welcome to the show.
Hey, James. Nice to chat again.
And how are you, Dan?
Yeah, really well. I'm here on a beautiful Southern California day in Culver City, which is a lot nicer than my hometown of Melbourne right now. So yeah, it's a starting point. I'm fantastic. Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah. Welcome to the United States. I'm excited to talk about why you're in the United States actually today. Mm-hmm. Dan, I'd love to get a little bit about your background and, of course, what Lug and Carry does. I know it, of course, as this amazing subscription business for people that want to, feel the joys of electric bikes and potentially do it on a basis that doesn't make them kind of dive in and buy the bike right away. But yeah, for the viewers at home, why don't you tell us a little bit more about Lug and Carry, what your vision is and what you built so far to date?
Yeah, so we started Lug and Carry based around the kind of insight from us that and started with my brother Benjamin, that the cargo bike it was just a game-changing vehicle format, and it just had a lot of capacity to eat into those, those car trips that, make up, whether it, pick your stat, but, I think here in LA, it's about 50% of trips in LA are under 3 miles, right? And they're done by car. Through kind of Benjamin, my brother's industry experience, and then some real-world experience from myself, once he convinced me to go and get a cargo bike, for kind of getting around urban environments, it is just totally a game changer. And then kind of like the insight we had from that, though, is what are all the barriers that are going to stop people from kind of taking on this format? And, there's a few, whether it's upfront costs, whether it's kind of ongoing support, will it work for me? Can I do it? Can I be a cyclist? All those sorts of things. I think as all those insights combined for some pretty deep research that we did helped us come up with like a flexible lease that we call a subscription, with all maintenance included and ongoing support was the behavior change catalyst that would really kind of gear these things up and kind of make it easier for everyday people just to stop driving the car and choose to use the cargo bike.
Yeah, I love it. So I think you've got two core insights there. One is, and we've talked about this a lot on the show, but one is this idea that the cargo bike, in many ways, can bundle so many trips even a regular e-bike can't. You have of course, additional room for cargo capacity, for additional people. It even just feels a little bit it can often feel like a sturdier ride. Often lower center of gravity. And so as much as a lot of the original thesis of micromobility was unbundling the car with the idea that, again, choose the mode for the trip. In some ways, the cargo bike really represents this amazing bundle for the average person to start to get them over the hump of I can use this maybe for 40% of my trips instead of 20% of my trips with an electric bike. So I think that's one insight you've nailed. And then the second one is this idea of flexible financing. Of course, we know in the auto market, very rarely do you go out and buy a bike, a car, just whole hog. It's generally leased, it's generally financed in some way. And so I think this insight of also getting, as you mentioned, normal, average, everyday people on these vehicles and with an easier on-ramp through, flexible financing model, could be really helpful. Okay. So then to date, Lug and Carry, again, with your accent, it's probably clear. But where do you operate, currently in the world?
Yeah. So we started in Australia, we started in Melbourne, and we're now in the three biggest cities in Australia. So Melbourne, Sydney, and Brisbane. Just coming up, I guess, to the 12-month anniversary of our Sydney branch, and in November last year when we launched in Brisbane. And yeah, we've got currently active in the fleet. We just kind of cruise through 1,600 kind of active bikes out on the road every day, riding around those cities. With Melbourne approaching around 900 of those. So we've kind of got this still critical mass thing going on in my home city, where I'll probably see 10 of them on the ride to work in the morning. It feels pretty good.
Amazing. And now other than all being turn bikes, turn cargo bikes, the GSD, HSDs, is there any branding on them from a Lug and Carry perspective, much like you might see with the, the blue wheel from our friends out in Amsterdam with their subscription business? Is there anything that would allow someone to maybe over time realize like, oh, that's actually part of the lug and carry community when they're sharing a bike?
Yeah, we do. We do some light touch branding. We kind of want to make sure that customers experience, because the important part of subscription is that it's not sharing and it's your bike. You know, while you're paying for it, this is your bike. It lives at your house, and you should think about it as yours, and it could be yours forever as well. So, we do some stuff that on the bikes, whether it's some stickering and color choice, that really indicates that you're part of the lug and carry community, and it's kind of building awareness for our brand and the movement from there. That's kind of how we think about the on bike design, but also, you know, they're gorgeous turn, you know, award-winning cargo bikes, and they don't need a lot of extra work to kind of look good and, you know, be well noticed. So that kind of helps.
Right. We've been talking a lot about community. Last week we had Kyle Dorkson on from the founder CEO of One Wheel, and the sort of the One Wheel community that he's built, and the identification that people have with One Wheel in the larger subset of the One Wheel category, unicycle category. I think, of course, what you mentioned is good, which is, I think Turn has its own sort of brand and community, which is great, and I think is thriving in a lot of ways. And then, of course, adding on the subscription community, I think that Lug and Carry has is also really interesting. And again, we've seen that with talking to Swap Feeds and what they've been able to build out in Europe with their bikes and the Blue Wheel identification, of course, that they're so known for. Okay, so this is all great, Dan. I think what's very exciting, of course, is why you're in Los Angeles, outside of just maybe skipping your Melbourne winter. You have an announcement for us today that I think I'm really excited to tell everyone about, especially really excited for all my friends here in Southern California. So why don't you tell us what you're up to in Los Angeles?
Yeah, no. So I'm here in Culver City. And we've just launched our sister company, Wombi, here in Culver City. And that's our sister brand to Lug and Carry. And it's our subscription offering here in the US. So we've been doing did a big evaluation period. We've been doing some nice trials the last month or so. And I've got a, fantastic team and really happy to be part of the Culver City community and broader West LA and get them running cargo bikes. So yeah, we're live.
Okay, amazing. This is awesome. So I was always very excited about what you're building in Australia. Clearly, it's something that I think we desperately need here in the US. Now you're here with Wombi, and I think that's all so amazing. So how can people think about it in Culver City? What does it take to qualify? And how should they think about sort of getting going with your product now that it's live?
Yeah. So look, it's really for anyone who's keen to try riding a bike and replacing their car trips. It's very similar to our Lug and Carry subscription service. It's a month to month lease, so low commitment, high levels of support, really great quality product that is safe and will be a long-lasting product. So it's pretty much, if you really wanted to try, riding around Culver City in West LA, I have to say I was out here for 4 weeks in late June, July. It's actually a really, really great place to ride a bike. Probably say equal or better than some places like Sydney in Australia and parts of Melbourne. Very buoyant about the number of people that can kind of just ditch the car in the morning and ride around in this kind of beautiful weather on some actually pretty nice streets to ride about.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
come and see us. Yeah. Jump on the website, wombi.us, and come and see us.
Great. And in terms of Culver City specifically, with kind of anyone that wants to, enjoy a cargo bike, I think that's also a target. Are you looking to go after certain types of schools? I have three kids, we're constantly on the cargo bikes with them, constantly now able to go to the beach, go to school. I've seen a massive uptick in Encinitas of people riding cargo bikes to school now. And again, you talk to any parent and it's just like, oh, this has been a game changer. This is a much better way to get to school than the basically the SUV line. It's quicker, it's more efficient. You can often just get a much better connection with your child in the morning, on the drop off or the pickup. So I guess I'm angling there. Are you focused on that kind of school ride, and parent and child, or anywhere specific from a customer perspective?
We're actually, I think it's kind of symptomatic of what's happening with the cargo bike market more generally, as a lot of awareness of the category builds, but where families are the logical, kind of early adopter, and really specific use case for a cargo bike. But we're increasingly seeing, like we are in Australia and also through our, research and early testing years, that there is a segment of customer who's like, particularly with the useful fallout of the Tern, the smaller cargo bikes from Tern that are kind of no big with another cargo bike. It's like, why wouldn't I have a bike that can carry more and do more? If I'm going to get an electric bike and it's a form of daily transport, it may as well carry more stuff. It may as well help me get to, my gym bag, you carry my dog or my cat. It can carry all shopping. It can do the hardware store run or the nursery run, all those sorts of things. So what we really liked about the West LA and particularly the Culver City location, Culver City investing in the infrastructure and actually already a pretty good place to ride a bike, but with a reasonable momentum behind continually improving. Genuine transport challenges. And that's really due to this very transient population that comes in and out of Culver City, that commutes in and out. And for those reasons, there's lots of these kind of cargo bike addressable trips being done, whether that be by families, or that be by people kind of getting around Culver City when it's difficult to get around Culver City because of that commuting traffic that comes in, or whether it's, coming in from broad other parts of LA into Culver City. So we just see, as a starting point, it had those three things kind of going for our trips.
Gotcha. So, again, it just like this is potentially a life hack for a lot of people that are trying to move around. And, whether it's a public transit not servicing them very well, and of course the car not servicing them very well because of congestion, this is the magic carpet ride around Culver City, so to speak, that can go almost anywhere. And as you mentioned, Culver City has done some great work on infrastructure that should help if there's safety concerns, which we know comes up with, of course, with the parents, but also just with anyone really riding.
I think that's a very nice way of saying the magic carpet ride. Like, as you know, I just had to jet over from another location very quickly for this. And it literally, that's what it felt like. It was just beautiful streets to ride down, kind of reasonably well marked out bike infrastructure on most of them. Very pleasant way to get around here.
100%. And so in terms of kind of understanding the customer and talking them through getting going with Wombi, clearly subscription is something that people deal with a lot in their lives in terms of other things, but not necessarily when it comes to a bike. So what is that experience like? What do you want people to do? How do you make that as kind of seamless and as easy as possible? I know clearly you're not just giving them the vehicle of, what you guys are often praised for is customer service and when something might go wrong, just that peace of mind. So to be curious to give people a sense of like, what does the full, 360 solution look like when someone does join the community and subscribe?
Yeah. So I guess kind of at the heart of the company itself is that particularly Benjamin or brothers experiencing behavior change around different forms of transport, particularly public transport, and then kind of broader micromobility. So a lot of that insight and early research is kind of stimulate and support, right? And so creating category awareness, which is what our marketing activities do, is really important. In the first place, the subscription creates a low barrier to entry through its kind of finance nature to it, which is low commitment, reducing that high upfront cost that prevents people from kind of thinking about whether I should try it. So it's low barrier to entry. And then ongoing, it's about making that new form of transport that you've chosen genuinely compete with your Toyota or your Subaru, which, when you walk out the front of your house in the world, generally don't have to worry about whether that Toyota or Subaru is going to work, or if something went wrong with it, what am I going to do? And for a lot of kind of cargo bike owners who kind of own and who aren't, you know, bike experts and who are more Toyota or Subaru drivers, the cargo bike's an intimidating product. Even a lot of the people we run into who've had cargo bikes for years are like, I wish I had this service, because when something goes wrong with my bike, it's exceptionally hard for me to get it back on the road. And so that kind of maintenance, roadside assistance, insurance, locking systems, they're all really important things, right? Just to kind of removing those day-to-day barriers and making sure that for that one time it doesn't work, we get you back on the road real quick. And you don't revert back to the, you know, back to the other form of transport. And then the thing that's in the, like, you know, the like carry community, and that's also going to be in the Wombi community here in the US, is that support around all of our experience and the staff we've hired are like super excited to help you become a bike rider. They want you to genuinely make that behavior change shift, and will impart all of their, you know, whether it's kid carrying knowledge, whether it's, you know, I live in this part of LA and I know the best way to ride around. And so we're like, you know, we're really super focused to know that in that first week, and then that you know that you can, the best way for you to do your top four trips that you do, you know, that you would have usually done at the car, and you need to transition those to the bike. And if you can be successful on those, that gets you through week one and week two. And then, you know, that kind of like helping people through those first 3 months is super important. And, as a company that gets paid every month for you continuing to use the bike, it's really nice to have that aligned incentive that we only are successful and we only earn our customers' dollar if we help them achieve the behavior change and the dream that they had when they first applied. So yeah, we like that.
Yeah, I think the service one is so critical. I'll tell a story really quickly. This morning, actually, I'm going to school. I see another parent who I often see. I drop off with a cargo bike. And he's sweating, and I'm like, oh, he's definitely sweating a lot for riding to school. He said, oh, my battery went out, and he's on an old Yuba Spicy Curry. He must have thousands of miles on this thing. And he said, it's going to take 6 weeks to replace it. So he's like, for the next 6 weeks, I'm still riding, but, like, you know, it's going to be a lot harder. And I thought, you know, it makes me wince a little bit, because, you know, I know he's clearly dedicated to this, and he's done it long enough that he's already converted. But I think, ooh, like, someone had just started and they were going to be out 6 weeks because of a battery issue. You know, that would just kill it. Right. And so, what you're doing here in creating this, not only just behavior change, but also providing the service and maintenance, to keep people on the road, like anything, is so important. And we can look up to car culture in this sense, and that, you know, they have made it quite easy to get your vehicle back out there. And I think what you guys are doing as well, and I think so many people definitely need that to drive much more mass adoption. Let's just talk about Turn real quickly. Clearly, a lot of audience will know about Turn. Turn is a, you know, I kind of see them a little bit as the Subaru of the cargo community in my mind. You know, what's the most popular model? I'd be curious there. Like, what are people mostly pulling off the shelf and subscribing with you guys? Which vehicle?
It's largely, like, it's been 50-50 for quite a while between our GSD, Turn GSD, which is the two-passenger offering, and then what the Turn HSD, which is the one-passenger offering. And then Turn introduced the Quick Haul last year, which was more of a value offering to try and keep the price point down and make the cargo bike, you know, the quality of a Bosch system and the quality of the Turn frame and the safety and the testing that goes into the Turn products that doesn't exist in a lot of other products, and make that more accessible. And so it's kind of like a 50-50 between, maybe it's getting closer to 60-40 between the two passenger GSD and then the rest of the category being the one person or the one passenger cargo bike or the no passenger cargo bike, because I use it as a bike that just also happens to, you know, carry stuff. Seeing a lot of dog owners, actually. A lot of dog owners who, like, go further than they can walk with their dog and explore. A few cat owners in there. And then just lots of I just don't want to own a car, and I'm, you know, don't want to spend so much money on Ubers, and the Turn Quick Haul is a great product for me to do that. So I think that's kind of what I was saying before. It's like where, as the awareness of the category and the format increases, we're seeing the less obvious use case arrive, which was, you know, we saw the families to start with, and now we're seeing like the general kind of person who just wants to stop driving the car.
Yeah. And so, you got maybe 3 to 4 Uber trips a month. If you displace 3 to 4 Uber trips, you're paying for your membership pretty easily. You know, short rides too. We're not talking about long haul Uber trips. You know, basically to go 3 miles on an Uber is, I don't know, is that $20 now? $22 or so after tip, and maybe?
I think so. Yeah. Based on my airport ride the other day. Yeah.
Oh, geez. Yeah. Airport. Whoa. Pay for your year there. That does make sense. And what would be kind of the biggest feature recommendation from the community that you haven't been able to fulfill yet? Like, what would be the, you know, because it's a good point on Quick Haul, of course, allows you to maybe come in at a lower price point. But I'd be curious if there's anything that you hear a lot that you haven't been able to fulfill on that you would like to fulfill on at some point.
Jeez. I think there's something interlocking, effectively. We use the Arbis locking systems and the alarms. It's this kind of holy grail of locking, tracking, an alarm. And there's various kind of go-to-market solutions on that, but I don't think there's a category killer offering from anyone yet. You know, God knows we've tried everything so far, you know, in this space, and continue to kind of invest in that. Because, you know, you can have great tracking, but that doesn't necessarily translate to physical protection and locking. We find the good old alarm, like, really, really useful. That's been super helpful for us. I think, you know, unfortunately, a lot of the electronic versions of these and the smartphone-enabled stuff, it is just too many steps at the, you know, at the end of trip or at the start of trip, you are just way too many steps compared to what you are in a car. To that piece. So, I think that's probably the one that's brought up the most, I reckon.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. And, you know, we see that a lot with after safety. Of course, people do worry a lot about theft. There's a lot that needs to be done there, including, you know, we'd love to see, you know, prosecutors and police treat it like, you know, automobile theft. You know, there's grand larceny. There's plenty of reasons why people don't necessarily steal cars at the same rate that they steal bikes. And we could do a lot of work outside of what you're doing to make that much harder on people that do decide to, you know, these are people's, basically they're people vehicles. I don't know why we treat it any different than we treat a car. Clearly the price point's different, but that doesn't matter. It's the same trip. Let's talk about ways to, you know, with the subscription model, of course, it makes me think a lot about what are incentives that can be provided to Wombi users and of course to you. And I'll give you an example. So where I go to, I drop my kids off at elementary school, there's about 600 kids. We think currently, and this is pretty high, I think, versus other places in the US, but probably more equivalent, not as much as Europe, but more equivalent to Europe. I think we have about 150 or so people currently walk or ride to school. So roughly 25% of the class is basically ridden in something other than a car. The data that we looked at and the routes, like basically if we could convert another 125, 150 people to taking a cargo bike, because they probably couldn't walk, probably a little bit too far to walk, basically there would never be traffic at school pickup or drop off. And if you think about that, though, the economic costs and the economic benefits, if you could actually reduce traffic completely, one could be just the safety reasons, right? No, you know, you might never lose a child to injury or death from being run over by a car, which, again, it's hard to put a price tag on that, right? That would be huge. And it could do a lot for just psychological improvement, not having to worry about that every day for a parent. But then also real cost, you know, I think it's like 60 to 70% of all drop-off trips result in the parent then needing to go to work. And so you think about like GDP, like, okay, so every day that parent is not late for work, you know, how much does that help that business improve? How much does that help? Of course, the potential, their need for them to speed later and all that. So there's this like great economic benefit, for instance, in mode conversion at schools, not to mention all the other trips you mentioned, right? Those people with that are taking it just to work. Again, they might not arrive at work lately. Do you see incentives, like mass incentives, whether your experience in Australia or now in the US, where you think you can lobby and you think you can get the government to pay attention to this in a way that could actually lead to people, you know, reducing subscription costs by 50%, let's say, because the government's going to incentivize that. Have you seen anything like that happening? You know, I'm just curious if you've done any work on that, because I think there's very real economic benefit that goes beyond just the benefit you're providing to the customer with your service overall.
Yeah, no, very specifically, actually. So last year, and I think maybe the last time Arthur Curtis featured on a different podcast, we might have spoken briefly about some trial programs that we were doing with municipalities based around schools last year. And I guess in the first half of 2023, that really ramped up. So we did quite a large program with our original municipality. And then I think we've done two more with different municipalities as well, where based around schools, we provide a free month, or they provide a free month for somebody to take one of our bikes and ride to school. And the success of those programs has been amazing. So I think, you know, one of the stats is that 90% of the participants on the bikes were driving to school previously, and only 70% stopped driving to school.
Wow. With when they had your vehicle.
No, even ongoing afterwards, even when they'd given
amazing
the vehicle back, yeah.
So you mode shifted them, and that mode shift became permanent, irregardless of the subscription.
Yeah, and that was from, you know, we've tried a couple of different variations on it, and we're, you know, trying to continue to improve, like the amount of stimulation, behavior change we get from it, and then balancing that against the amount of investment that the municipality has to make. So we're trying a few different things, but it's not a lot, you know, like, you know, so you don't have to give somebody a free bike for a year to stimulate the change. We, you know, as you talked about the category, is that there's the cargo bike itself is such an enabler to cycling from a form factor perspective, and that, you know, all of those people you said have to do drop off and then go to work, none of those people previously could take their kids to school and go to work until the form factor changed, right, on a bike. I mean, take their kids, they couldn't do it. And so now that they can, it's the, you know, the awareness is a big thing. So, you know, we do a lot with the municipalities to, you know, do test ride events and awareness in and around the schools. You know, obviously it's a great thing for us to be helping build the category, obviously. So awareness and then just making it really easy to start is what we think is important. So that's kind of the way we think about that, you know, stimulating and around schools. And I guess we're, you know, as a team, and with our partners, we're really thinking about, well, the success that we've had across, call it 3 or 4 municipalities now, what would this look like on a much bigger scale? It could be like really transformative because the data's backing it up. So how do we, and what's the best way to execute on that and bring the different participants in the community that need to be there to make that really successful, but on a big, big scale? So, you know, we're very excited about that. I don't see that being any different here.
And in fact, I agree.
Yeah. I would say there's probably seems to be more at a state level and even at the municipality level. There is probably more action being done at the incentive level here than there is in Australia currently. So I'm pretty hopeful here.
Yeah, I should be. I think what's happening at the city level now is you're increasingly getting mobility manager positions, like where, you know, people in the city are actually dedicated to being a mobility manager, and a lot of their job is basically helping think about safety and infrastructure, but also mode shift. Like, it's just sort of like paramount. It's not political. It's not even necessarily related to climate. It's just like, hey, mode shift would be really good in our city, and what are the ways that we can do that? And clearly, like, there's some shared models there, but also this type of model, especially in the US, where we know owned is so important to people, or owned subscription is so important to people versus the shared model. I think that plays very well. So anyone listening, of course, if you're in a mobility manager, if you're in Department of Education, it is could be a really interesting area. You know, like bike buses are becoming more and more popular. Clearly, we need the enablement to bike buses as more people with these vehicles that have access to them. You know, we were just talking to the person that runs mobility at Texas A&M, right? 80,000 students. They have this amazing program around mode shift. That's so important to them because they have terrible congestion issues. But at the same time, they are, you know, and again, we spoke to it very briefly there. You mentioned it with Tern, but all of Tern's vehicles are UL certified. You know, you're not going to have the type of, we've had fire related issues, of course, with electric bikes or DIY kits that are out there. A brand like Tern and the quality of assurance that they provide, you're just most likely never going to have an incident like that. So there's a lot of course, education, and but there's a lot of centralized planning where, of course, I think your service becomes something that I think there's a lot of appetite for here in the U.S. So let's speak quickly to your expansion in the U.S. So you're in Culver City. I think you've got a pretty amazing goal, which is you want to increase the number of bicycle commuters by 50% in your first year, which good on you. I'd love to see you do that. That's an incredible goal. But yeah, what are your KPIs to say, okay, now it's time to not just be in Culver City, but to expand to other cities? What does that look like as you make your way across the United States?
Yeah, so kind of like we've done it in Australia, just being really considered over the next few months as we launch in Culver City and making sure we've got good product market fit and that everything's really translating well here on the ground. In Culver City, in the US, we've planned out, you know, how we might progress around the US. Southern California's got, you know, I think it's great, and it's a, you know, we did, one of the reasons we chose to launch here is because we think there's quite a few addressable markets quite close, you know, close together here, and from, you know, from a business owner's perspective, that's great to build a culture and a team around. And it's also great to kind of prove out from a behavior change perspective, you know, bigger impacts in kind of close communities with it. So we thought that was a lot of the reason in terms of choosing to start here in Southern California. So I think we'll stay pretty focused on that for now. We think we'll get the Culver City branch up and running, and maybe one or two more branches, in, you know, the first half of 2024, if things are going well. Yes, and we'll kind of have a checkpoint pre-Christmas, and, you know, if things are going well here and the product's translating well and the team are executing well and customers are happy, we're all on we go. Yeah.
Okay, that sounds great. So for people that are interested in learning more, they're going to go to wambi.us. In terms of the restrictions, Dan, like being in Culver City, is there a zip code tied to the credit card, or what are you looking for there in terms of actually being in the Culver City defined area?
No, so look, it's West LA at the moment. So we have so on the website you'll be able to see it's 6.5 or 6-7 mile radius from the Culver City store. We'll service outside that as well, but there'll be fees and slightly different SLA for drop-offs. Like, so everything's included. Like, it's free delivery, it's roadside assistance, it's servicing at your home if you need it, which we can execute really well on within a good geographic area. And I think it's 6.5 miles. The team just putting it on the website today. So no, it's not just Culver City, it's West LA and that area, and it's beyond that. So I know we've got a couple of trial customers down in the South Bay area, and we're keen to see where the rest of the demand comes from, and that helps us kind of open up that, you know, service that radius really, really well, and then make sure that, you know, because, you know, this is operations and service delivery is the business that we're in, right? And so making sure that we're, you know, fulfilling all of our customer promises from that perspective, and then we can open it up. But no, please get in touch. And the more people maybe outside that area that are interested, that we know about, helps us make good decisions. So yeah, we'd love everyone to come and check us out and let us know if they can.
Okay, great. Well, yeah. So go to the website, check it out. If they can't service you right now, it sounds like they will be hopefully in the near to longer term. And again, for a lot of people that want to try a turn, which I know there's a lot of people out there that are definitely interested in trying a turn, this is potentially a great way to get your feet wet on one of the turn models that Dan and his team offer. Okay, Dan. Well, congrats again. And yeah, we're looking forward to seeing you expand and seeing how you change GDP by getting people from A to B better and safer in a more fun way. So thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, Jack. So that was fun. Appreciate it.
See you.
See you, man. Bye.